Since so many of our interactions with the outside world are online these days, and most of us are working at home or alone, it can be easy to forget how other people can perceive us. So in this episode, we wanted to discuss several strategies and smart habits to help you maintain a professional image. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire.
Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 48 for those of you who are keeping track. In today's episode, we'll be sharing our thoughts on maintaining your professional image, how you come across to clients and colleagues in online and real-life interactions. But before we get into today's topic, let's share some updates. So let's see, what's new with me? I just got back, and so did you, from the American Translators Association board meeting, the first in-person one we've had in well over a year. That was really nice to meet in person. It's such a different dynamic when you can meet and get things done in person. And then also, we have a new puppy in our house.
Yay!
Yeah, so we have another mascot for the podcast.
She's the cutest.
Yeah, she is. She's mischievous, but she's really sweet and she's really cute and loving dog. Her name is Lucy. She's an English bulldog. And we feel like we're going back to the infant days with, you know,
yep.
Yeah, getting up multiple times a night to let her out. And sometimes I do wish I could put a diaper on her. But anyway, yeah. Other than that, I'm getting ready to teach a new course for training for translators, which I think I've mentioned here before. It's called Write Better Copy for your TNI website. So it's for freelance translators and interpreters who want to improve their website copy, or if they don't have any, to start from scratch. And I'm also welcoming a new group of monthly coaching group coaching clients to my group coaching calls and program that I have through my own website. So that'll be starting up in September. So that's coming up quick. What about you?
Wow. I just want to say before we start, Lucy is adorable and you should be sharing more of her on our social media.
All right. I'll do that. Yeah.
Okay. So what's new with me? Yeah, it was really nice to meet in Nashville with you and the rest of the ATA board. It was my first in-person board meeting and I really enjoyed it. Mm. It was great. So inspiring. Otherwise, I'm busy with some fun localization projects and transcreation work for clients. And lately, it's been a lot of the topics that I really love, you know, health and wellness, training of staff, ethics and anti-corruption, some other social responsibility related topics. So it's been a really nice welcome back from my summer break, a long summer break.
Cool. Very nice. Yeah, you just got right back into it, huh?
Yes. Yeah, I hope. Good. I mean, I think I shared in a past episode, too, that I like to schedule a day off after I come back from vacation or a trip. And it didn't happen this time. It was straight, the day after I returned from Nashville, it was back to work. There was just so many requests and projects I didn't want to say no to. But it was a nice break, too, because I did take a break from work for a month, end of June and July. So
was it a month? Wow, it didn't feel like it.
Yeah, 4 weeks in total, which was totally worth it.
Is worth it. I need to do that. Oh, okay.
So
cool.
Busy now. Also busy teaching a course for the TNI program at Houston Community College. Mm-hmm. I'm working on my presentation for the OSTI conference this fall that I will be doing with a colleague, Alina Brandt, on the topic of localization. And the school started here, so I'm busy with my kids, trying to keep everyone happy and healthy. It's yet another challenging back-to-school season, but we're trying to make the best of it. And yeah, I feel like that's enough.
Yeah, that's more than enough. And I didn't even talk about my translation copywriting work. I feel like that's, you know, one more thing too, yeah, to think about, of course, on top of everything else. Well, cool. Okay, let's dive into today's topic then. Today's topic is maintaining a professional image. We all know that first impressions count, and this applies to all interactions you have with other people, both online and in person. But when you're running a business, it's even more important that you come across as a reliable, trustworthy professional, somebody that your clients and colleagues can trust and value. After all, this is how we often choose service providers ourselves, whether we need a graphic designer or an accountant, or when we're looking for colleagues to collaborate with. But since so many of our interactions with the outside world are online these days, and most of us are working at home or alone at least, it can be easy to forget how other people can perceive us. So in this episode, we wanted to discuss several strategies and smart habits to help you maintain a professional image.
Yeah, that's right. That's a topic that we found ourselves coming back to again and again in our conversations, you know, off the podcast. So we felt it's a good time to record an episode about it, but we won't be going into, you know, all the way into basics of personal branding and like talking about how to establish a personal brand. Otherwise, you'd be listening to this episode all day. So instead, we'll link a few resources in the show notes that you might find helpful if you want to sort of dive deeper and learn more about that topic. So, for example, there are a few webinars from the American Translators Association on the topic of personal branding, phone and email etiquette, networking, and such. So we will link to those resources in our show notes.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so let's start with email interactions with our colleagues and clients. Well, like, what are some do's and don'ts here, and what smart habits and tips do we recommend based on our experience? So this might sound a little silly, but I think a lot of people, because we get so many emails every day, a lot of people don't think to reread their emails before they send them. Yeah. I know I can be guilty of that. I also use quite a bit of voice to text, that feature, you know, where you can speak and then it turns into text, the voice to text feature.
Yeah.
And if you're not careful, if you don't reread something, you may send something with lots of mistakes in it. And being translators and interpreters, it's important that we try to be accurate with our words. And, you know, if you're a translator, especially spelling things correctly, you know, things like that, not making loads of errors. And so I think just the very basics of it is to just check your emails before you send them, and also check that you're sending them to the right person. Sometimes I get copied on emails that weren't meant to be sent to me. And I think, oh, that's kind of odd. But clearly this wasn't meant for me. So then I need to respond and say, hey, I'm pretty sure you didn't mean to copy me, probably somebody else. It just takes some time out of my day. And also, you never know, maybe you might be sending something that's not meant for other people, especially if it has to do with client information or documents or something. So that's something to be careful of. Seems like a real obvious thing, I know, but just taking a moment to reread an email and not just rush through everything. I find sometimes when I'm rereading my own that I may have repeated myself, and so just to make things more efficient for the other person, I will try to remove any repetitions or, you know, extra words that are not necessary. Like one that I often edit out when I'm reading something is the word that, THAT. If you think about it, most of the time it's not necessary to include. So just things like that, making things more succinct and, you know, get to the point quicker. And something else to think about is also the level of formality, your tone of voice and your style. Depending on who you're writing to, you can be more or less formal, but also just think about who your clients are in general. If you're thinking more about clients here than colleagues, for example, what is your level of formality with them? Some clients are very laid back, you know, depends on what market you might work for. I know that I have website course students who tell me that their web copy needs to be very informal because they work with artists, or they might need to be very formal if they're working with like an accountant or something, you know, or not accountant, financial firm or something like that, or lawyers. So think about the formality and the tone of voice that you're using, and also the style. You want to use words that your clients would use and not something necessarily that we would use to talk about our work. And then, of course, turning to colleagues, if you think about the formality and tone, you always want to try to maintain a professional tone, even if you're talking to somebody who's a colleague and a friend. You know, I think that's something that we need to all consider, because our colleagues are often one of our best sources of new business. They refer clients to us. So we have to keep a professional tone, and that maintains your image as a professional as well, so that they can feel comfortable referring people to you, too. I mean, I have received some emails before where somebody's maybe upset about something and it comes out in the tone of the email. And remembering that you can't pick up on all the nuances of communications when something is in written form. So it's very important to try to really maintain that professionalism and tone in an email as well. And what about email signatures? So this is something that is funny. I have like two or three blog posts about this, simply because I think this is something that people often overlook. Mm-hmm. Email signature is really important, because a lot of people use that for sort of a digital business card, if you will. Make sure that you keep maybe a logo there that represents your business, definitely your what you do, who you serve, you know, if you're a translator, what kind of translator are you? Because you never know when your email message is going to be something somebody searches for. You want to make sure that you've got information in there that helps people find you easily, but also because your email could get forwarded to somebody, so make sure your contact information is there. You'd be surprised, a lot of people don't even bother to create an email signature, which I think is kind of strange, because it's not something new. But I like to put other things in my email signature to test them out. And that was, you know, kind of the topic of the blog posts that I mentioned. One thing I do is I put a link to my LinkedIn profile. I found that I get a lot of people connecting with me because of that, especially clients. I also like to put, you know, oh, if I'm going to be out of the office, I will add that in there, the upcoming dates when I'm out of the office. Any presentations that I'm giving, I'll add that as well, because I think that it's important to let clients know that you are staying active in your field. And even if they don't attend those types of events, you know, maybe it's a colleague facing event or something, it's nice for them to know that you are keeping up in your field and that you are well regarded as a professional. So those are just a few ideas. I have plenty more about the email signature. But, you know, just in general, I think sometimes something I've noticed over the years when it comes to email communications is that some people have started to use it almost like texting in a way. And what I mean by that is the messages are short to the point of being almost too short to where it looks rude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they won't have an opening or something. They'll just get straight to the point. And it's like, well, this is a new conversation. Hello. You know, how are you? Good morning. Kind of a thing.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if it's because so many of us are in our phones these days, and you know, people send emails from their phones. Yeah. Or is it, that could be a factor, I wonder.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I also think that people feel rushed, and so they're just trying to get through the message. Yeah. Quickly, but that can come across appearing very unprofessional. Mm-hmm. And also it's important to maintain this level of style and formality to a certain degree. I always ask people, how are they doing? Or I hope you have had a good. Yeah. Weekend or something, because you can't just jump right into, you know, here, this is what I want, you know, or they may not even put your name in it. Sometimes it's kind of like, I don't. Yeah. Know how we got here, but I think it's one, that we just all deal with too many messages. And two, I think there's almost a certain degree of people going too extreme. Mm-hmm. When they're trying to be succinct, that they think, oh, those niceties at the beginning and end of a message are unnecessary, so I'm just going to exclude them. And I'm like, okay, maybe to some degree, but I think they're still nice to include, because, you know, we all deal with a lot of messages every. Yeah. Day, so let's at least try to put in our niceties where we can, and that says something about you too. You know, oftentimes clients can tell if you're a pleasant person to. Mm-hmm. Work with. If you at least have a nice greeting or a closing or something like that, or you say something personable. So that's how I feel about that. So what about you? What are your thoughts on email interactions and how they can influence our professional image?
Well, I've been taking notes as you were speaking too, because I wanted to comment. That often happens when Madeleine and I have conversations, like taking notes to, you know, make sure. Mm. I don't forget what I wanted to comment on, which you said. I agree that we often forget about the tone and style as we write emails. Mm-hmm. And I am guilty of that too. So a while ago, I started using Grammarly.
Mm-hmm.
I have the pro subscription and I use it when I write emails too. And what I like about it is that, well, not only as a non-native English speaker, I am often insecure about the things I write in English. Like I wish, you know, sometimes I'm like, I wish somebody could check this for me. Well, I feel like this is taken care of when I use Grammarly, but it doesn't just correct, like it doesn't correct your mistakes automatically. It suggests, you know, corrections and like edits to you. And I like that there's some explanations there too. Like this is wrong because blah, blah. So I'm like, oh, I'm actually learning to avoid that mistake in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also enabled in Grammarly, there's like a separate function that you can turn on or off that has to do with tone. And it tells me how my message might be, you know, coming across. If it's friendly, if it's formal.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it tells me, you know, overall, based on what I wrote, this is how it's coming across. It's coming across too friendly or like super informal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot that you could do that. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, sometimes the corrections are not quite right or they misunderstand what you're trying to say, but usually those are easy to spot.
Yes.
You just dismiss it. But yeah, I like Grammarly for that too. I forgot about that.
And then another thing it was like a tip I learned from Corinne McKay in Speaking of Translation in their podcast. And I don't remember the name of the tool, of the software, but I'll find it and we'll list it in our show notes. And refer to that episode on Speaking of Translation. She mentioned that she uses a tool that does text to voice. You know, it helps her proofread her own work, translations and such, but also emails. And so instead of like sitting and reading, because it's also very easy to miss certain mistakes and things as you read your own thing, it's sometimes easier to spot those when they are being read to you, especially by a different voice. So I found that a very useful tip.
I think it's in Microsoft Word. I'm pretty sure. It's just the read aloud thing. No,
she mentioned a specific tool that also works across, like it works across pretty much anything. PowerPoint, Word, and for sure, like internet browsers too.
Oh yeah, so, let's find that then. Great.
I'll find that. And then another thing I learned to do by trial and error, by making some mistakes, is that when I respond and it's an email that it's like pretty important in a sense, or like something I really don't want to mess up, I delete the receiver's email because sometimes I accidentally send a message before it's finished. I think it might have happened to many of us. So I delete that or like copy and paste it somewhere else so that I am sure that the email is ready. And then I put in the receiver's email because I've been in those situations before where it's pretty important. I'm like, oh, I press something and off it goes.
Wait a minute. Do you use Google Workspace, which used to be called G Suite?
Right.
For your email?
Yeah. I do.
You know, you can set up the 30 seconds to cancel it option.
That's usually not enough for me. Yes, I do. Okay. Yeah, it's already on, but it's...
Sorry.
by the time I realize and find how to, like, reverse it, it's you know,
okay,
too late.
Okay, all right, never mind.
So, and I don't like being in that stressful situation, so that's what I do now. If it's important, I put in the recipient at the
good
end.
Good tip, yeah.
And then I also got into the habit of if it's a first-time client, sometimes I'm checking my phone and I see an email from a first-time client, I do not reply from my phone because I'm sure there'll be, you know, style, tone, various grammar mistakes. I want to avoid that. And I want to make sure that my signature, the email signature, is included. Mm-hmm. And I feel like on the phone, it's either more tricky or I'm not sure if it works the same way. I prefer to do it from my actual computer. My other thoughts, I actually wanted to mention a couple of scenarios and things that happened to me or things that I observed and what I learned from them.
Oh.
For example, if a colleague reaches out to you and says, hey, I know you work with such and such, you know, language pair and subject matter. I have a client that I think would be a great fit. They're looking for someone, you know, and sharing their information with you, or even sometimes copying the client saying, hey, this is, you know, Madalena. She is a great translator working in this language pair, and I think she'll help you with your project.
Mm-hmm.
My approach, that's my personal approach to, you know, when I am on the receiving end of emails like this, is to thank the colleague, say hi to the client briefly, tell them that you'll follow up with a separate email and then do that.
That's what I do too.
Follow up with a separate email.
Yeah, right? I do the same thing.
And I've seen situations where that doesn't happen, where the recipient of that email just waits for the client to contact them.
Oh, the one being referred to?
Yes, right. Yeah.
Wow.
And I am not sure that's the right approach, because I've also been in a situation where I've referred a client to a colleague and, you know, copied them and such. And then the client contacts me again and says, hey, what happened to your colleague? I've never heard from them.
Oh,
and I'm like,
no.
Because I feel like that reflects badly on me too, because I referred them and I assured the client that they'd be a great fit and they'll take care of them. So,
well,
just wanted to mention, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen on purpose. We're all busy. Maybe someone's traveling. Maybe, you know, things happen.
Yeah.
But I just think it's important to not wait for the client to contact you. You know, if you're being referred to somebody, do that first step. Because that lets your colleague know, the one who refers a client to you, that lets them know that you have taken care of their client, and maybe it's someone they've worked with for a long time, or like a client that's important for them. It sets a friendly, professional tone, and it shows the client that you're proactive and you're professional and you can be trusted.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't sit around and wait, you know, for that client to contact you, because the introduction has been made.
Yeah. Usually, I mean, my assumption is that the person being referred to should follow up quickly at first, but that's interesting. Yeah. So I don't think it looks as bad for you, the referrer, but it definitely looks bad for the person being referred to. Even if they can't help, they should at least say so.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Mm. And another scenario I wanted to mention, which again, you know, I observed or was told about, is when a client contacts you by email or by phone, and they just seem, you know, you're kind of maybe a little suspicious, or maybe their email seems standoffish or short, and maybe you feel like you don't have enough information, or if you're not sure if it's a real client or a scammer, because that happens too. I've heard, and let me share the story. Actually, it's a personal story. I had a client who called me. We had a conversation. We agreed on the next steps. And then they tell me, can I just say thank you for being so friendly and easygoing? Because I called a couple of other translators from, insert the name of an organization for translators, and they all seemed so grumpy.
Oh my, that's not good.
Sadly, no. And so sadly, I have heard similar things several times after that. And I think it's just an issue we need to talk about, like, honestly and openly. I don't think we all are purposely trying to be rude to people who call us or email us.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, if it's an email, maybe, you know, we're not really reflecting on how it comes across. If it's a phone call, not everyone's a fan of phone calls. Maybe came at a, you know, bad time. You're in the middle of something. You're busy. Maybe you're stressed.
Then you don't answer the phone.
Right. That would be my approach to it.
Or don't put your phone number out there if that's such an issue.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or like, you know, some people are suspicious and like, are you a scammer? And so since then, not that I feel like I was grumpy with people before, but since that conversation with a client, I always think about their words when I'm on a call with someone, like a client especially, or a colleague.
To be friendly.
To be friendly and just to like treat people the way I would want to be treated if I called a service provider.
Of course. Yeah.
Because, you know, being rude or being suspicious or being grumpy doesn't serve anyone, and especially doesn't serve your relationship with a legit client.
Right.
If it's a scammer, I feel like if it's a scammer calling you, they couldn't care less that you're grumpy. But if it's a legit client, they now have a bad first impression.
Yeah.
And so on that topic, too, I wanted to say, you know, if you're nervous about scammers, I feel like it really helps to take some steps to feel a little more protected and a little more confident. Mm-hmm. There's a webinar we can link to that is free. It's by Carola Berger, and she did it through ATA. It's free to members and non-members. So we'll link to that. And there's a lot of great tips there. You can also use a phone, like a function on, if you have an iPhone, there's a function there that you can enable that filters out or like
spam.
Tells you, you know, potential scam, right? So at least you feel like you don't treat every phone call with the same level of suspiciousness.
Yeah. I'll be honest though, I've never heard of anybody being scammed by phone call.
No, it's usually
for
emails.
I mean for services, like professional service.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Usually emails are text messages.
Okay, well, let's just all be a little happier then.
Yes, let's do that. Yeah, and my last tip, I guess, I mean, similar to what you mentioned, people just tend to forget about how certain things come across when they use email. And I feel like cultural differences come into play as well a lot, like the way we phrase certain things, the way we joke. I mean, jokes in general aren't always successful in writing.
Right,
How certain things we write may be perceived by people coming from other cultures. So just something to be aware of, you know, being culturally sensitive on email as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just kind of rereading your message, trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes.
Yeah, good tip. Wow. Okay. I'll have to pay attention to that now. Being extra friendly. Yeah. But honestly, most of my clients don't call. Individuals would call more. Yeah. But that's good to know, though. You can stand out by being friendly. But what about your online presence, your website, and any professional directories where you list your services? Like, these can be often serve as your virtual storefront or doorstep, if you will. They tell clients who you are and what you do. So when we draft copy for our website or professional profiles, we often forget that our clients' view of what's important to them and what they need is often different from ours. And so we only have a few seconds to catch their attention when they visit our online, you know, spaces. But most people usually read like the headline and then a few lines of text before they decide whether, you know, you seem like the right fit or if they want to move on and look for somebody else. So how do we maintain a professional image in these online spaces? So first of all, I think it's important to talk about, you know, what are some examples of what we're talking about here? So like online professional directories. First of all, the directory itself can signal to a client the type of professional you are, right? And what I mean by that is we all know there are different types of directories out there. I prefer not to be on the ones where basically it's like racing to a certain price, you know, that type of like a job board. But I'm talking about like a professional directory, maybe through an association or something like that. Those tend to be more respected by clients in general. But, you know, even so, no matter the type of directory you're listed in, wherever you are, there's a way to make sure that you are standing out to clients. And this could even be like a Google listing, for example. So one thing would be to make sure that your headshot, your photo is professional and up to date. You wouldn't believe how many people use out of date headshots. It's just so funny because if you ever meet somebody in person, you go, that's not what I thought you looked like. You know, sometimes people use really outdated ones. So make sure that it's updated and that it's a professional headshot. And make sure that your profile and your about section, whatever it is, whether it's on your website or in a directory, really does, you know, mention what your strengths are, but also how you'll serve your clients with those strengths. One thing I like to tell people is not to give their life story because it's not really what clients are there to find out. Oftentimes our clients are not looking for where we went to school. They just want to know, do you have what I need to help me overcome this obstacle, get this translation done or, you know, interpret for this particular meeting or something. So I think it's important to get to the point, but also speak to the clients wherever you are online. And also make sure that the description of your services is clear. A lot of people tend to forget very important aspects of their professional image online. The languages they work in, if they serve a certain sector or market, sometimes they talk about it the way that we talk about it as translators and interpreters, and maybe not necessarily the way that clients do. You can really up your professional image by using language that your clients use to talk about their own sector or market. So those are just some quick tips there to think about. I could talk about this pretty much all day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think those are important. And just also, like I said, thinking about where you are, what types of directories you're listed in. I know that when I started, I was in a couple of online directories where a lot of people start out, and I made sure to close those out completely when I started to get enough well-paid work, and I didn't want to just have a presence there anymore. For me, it wasn't the professional image I wanted to share. So that's, you know, we can all choose our own, but that's something to think about. Do you have any other tips on how we can elevate our professional image online?
Yes, a couple of thoughts on that. Well, first of all, I think it's important to think about the pros and cons of listing any kind of contact information your clients will use to reach you, whether it's email, phone, or, you know, address. I think most of us maybe would not list the address like where you were physically located, mm-hmm. but maybe some kind of a mailing address. Because again, looking at it from a different angle, what kind of information would you want if you were looking for a service provider? I know most people, you know, no matter the field, prefer to call someone and not, yeah. not necessarily email. True. Some people prefer email, but if you need an answer right away, you know, many clients prefer to call. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's a good idea to list a phone number. It doesn't have to be your personal phone number mm-hmm. if you don't want those calls. If you don't have any other choice and you list your personal phone number, you don't have to pick up every phone call that comes your way. You can just record a nice outgoing, you know, voice message. You can call people back when you have a moment. Mm-hmm. You can use a voicemail service. There's one on Google called Google Voice. Or you can get a business number and have like a separate phone for business purposes. Mm-hmm. But especially if you list your services online, like on Google Business or on your website, clients may look for someone on the go, and it's much easier to click like that number because they can call someone right away. So just something to think about.
Yeah. And sometimes it looks bad when you don't have a phone number.
Yeah.
I sometimes get skeptical of any business that doesn't have a phone number.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm finding now it's more common that some businesses like brick and mortar.
Yeah.
That don't have a phone number. I think that's the strangest thing.
Yeah. How would you reach them? Right.
Right.
And then with the mailing address too, like I understand it's a tricky one. And I wouldn't list it on my personal website, but if you're in any like professional directories, it's something to think about, you know, privacy concerns versus professional appearance. Some clients, or I would say many clients, often look for someone local. They want to know where you're based. Mm-hmm. So having some kind of address, if it's a business address, if it's a mailing service, if it's a PO box, maybe a good idea. Mm-hmm. It just shows you're a business, that you're local, that you know you can be somehow tracked down. So it kind of increases the level of trust, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And that's an easy thing to organize, like to arrange on your end. And then another thing I wanted to mention is having some kind of portfolio or testimonial, something that shows that you deliver results other people are happy with. Mm-hmm. And you, I know you have some blog posts on the topic too, so we can link to those. You don't have to list clients' names specifically, or especially if they didn't give you permission, or like directly quote the work you did for them. You really need the client's permission for that, you know, to be shared. But what you can do perhaps is to describe the sector or the field that they work in, what type of work you did for them, what challenges this helped solve, what you enjoyed about this project and things like this. Mm-hmm. That would both, you know, maintain confidentiality and like not disclosing anything, but also would give some examples and some sort of proof to potential clients that you're an actual business and other people can, you know, vouch for that. Somehow shows your quality of your work. And since we're on the topic of online platforms, what about our social media presence? I think we all know what happens, you know, when you put things online, they can be accessible to many other people, and a simple Google search can tell you a lot about a person. So let's talk briefly about using social media in our professional lives.
Okay.
And I would say the most important thing, that's something I think about all the time, is searchability. Everything we put online stays online in one form and another. Mm-hmm. And it is not uncommon for businesses to do their due diligence and do some online research about the person or business they're talking to or considering working with.
That's true.
So it may be a good idea to ask yourself every once in a while, what would they see if they did an online search about me, and actually make this a part of your business audit, maybe once a year, mm-hmm. Checking your online presence and thinking about what impression it gives and if it's the kind of impression you want to make. And one thing related to that I often see is, you know, any kind of ranting, venting, discussing client interactions or sharing work that you do for clients online, even in closed groups or on social media in general, just not something I think looks good to clients if they ever come across this in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look good to many colleagues. I feel like it makes it less likely that someone will refer work to me if I criticize every other project or client I work with.
Yeah.
And if it were me, I would also be nervous, you know, if I consider to refer someone to a colleague and I notice this type of behavior, it makes me nervous that they'll share something confidential.
That's true.
And I understand, like, we all need to vent. I do too. But I think it's worth finding a safe space to do that, just within a close group of colleagues or a friend or a colleague or someone you can talk to and not, like, take it all online.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
What do you think about that?
I agree. I hadn't thought about the ranting and venting stuff, but I do see a good bit of that at least once or twice a week. I think you're right. Keep it in a closed space, a closed small group of you know, close colleagues and, or friends or whatever, but not online, not on your social media accounts. I mean, I do look people up when I want to work with them. I go and find out, like, what is this person about? And if I see that kind of thing, then I just don't want to work with that, because I'm like, well, what if, you know, there's a misunderstanding and then they decide they're going to start talking, you know, about the project we worked on or about me or, you know, but even if not, I mean, I have seen some colleagues put some pretty negative stuff about working with certain clients, and I get that they're upset in that moment, and yes, maybe they are correct in feeling, you know, having a negative reaction to it. But most people realize that that's only one side of a story, and so it does just make the person ranting look unprofessional. Oftentimes it's almost always the case. So I think just try to avoid that, and I know that a lot of people do it because they want some validation. They want other people to say, yeah, you're right, and well, this is what I would do. But I mean, I've even seen things like that seem pretty neutral in nature where people are like, oh, I hate agencies, they all do this, and I'm like, not all of them, actually. A lot of the good ones are wonderful to work with. And you know, it's just, I don't know, it doesn't bode well for anybody's professional image to do that, not just like on a regular basis, but even just every once in a while. Because some people will not understand how you mean something, and they may just think that you're a difficult person to work with, especially if you do it regularly. So that just could, you know, altogether just taint your professional image, even just among colleagues, which is, like I said at the beginning, really important to maintain, because our colleagues do tend to refer people to us on a regular basis. They know us, they know what we do and how we work. So yeah, it's, you know, find somewhere else to do it, I guess. But yeah, just in general, like, your appearance and impact on your professional image and people's willingness to work with you can definitely be influenced by how you appear online in social media, even if you don't share much about your business. People do look you up. You know, that is often the case. Even if you're going, you know, for employment, that's been the case for years. But even just to hire somebody, you know. And also, it's important to think about your interactions with other people online, even if you're not, like, you're not starting a post, but maybe you're responding to something. If you come across as, you know, criticizing people publicly or being rude with your comments or defensive, people see that and they go, whoa, you know, I got to be careful around that person, or I don't want to talk to that person, or, you know, various things that people will assume if you tend to be somebody who is not more careful with how they phrase things. Because like I said, you know, a lot of this, a lot of tone and nuance doesn't come through in something in text form. So yeah, that's something to really be careful about. Well, we've covered a lot of ground, but let's share one last smart habit or tip on maintaining a professional image toward clients and colleagues. So I was thinking about just one of the many interactions that we all tend to have regularly with clients is invoicing and sending contracts and things like that. And I think it's important to remember that even that can set the tone for your professional image. So, like, are you using professional letterhead when you send out, you know, well, it doesn't have to be a letterhead, but like professional format, I should say, for things like your contracts or your quotes and terms and conditions, you know, any kind of certificates of accuracy, if you send those out as a certified translator, are you sending invoices that are not, you know, unprofessional looking? I get a lot of invoices and I have seen them all across the spectrum. And the ones that are professional do stand out sometimes from others that are really not professional. Do you invoice on time? Even that, like, that's not something that's in a, you know, written form, but that's just a matter of professionalism in and of itself. Or do you invoice super late? I mean, I do get invoices from my boutique translation agency that come months late, and I'm always shocked. I'm like, don't you need to get paid? but it's true. And I think that that does lend itself to an assumption where there's a lack of professionalism, even if there may not be. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that's something to think about.
Yeah.
What about you? What tips do you have?
I would just share one is like responsiveness, and not to say that we all have to be available 24/7. I am against work-life imbalance and working late and, like, you know, dropping everything you're doing to answer an email. But I also think that we should try to avoid being silent after a client sends us a request. And like not responding for days or weeks sometimes, because that makes them wonder, like, did you see my email? Are you busy? Do you even
you're not interested?
Yeah, you know, yeah. Do you even exist? I mean, you don't have to like drop everything you're doing and answer right away. But if you're busy, but you've seen it, I would say send a quick note when you can. Just, hey, thanks for your email. I'll respond to you, whatever. Give them a timeline. And you can even create a short template in your email, you know, through the email service you're using, and use it to make the process quicker so that you don't have to, you know, spend too much time on it. Or if you're really swamped, set an autoresponder. I've seen people do that. Like, hey, I'm busy until, or whatever, I'm fully booked until such and such date. Because that tells people, like, okay, I should try someone else.
Yeah, exactly. At least give them that courtesy. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we shared lots of tips in this episode. If you'd like to dive deeper and explore some of the resources that we mentioned, you'll find them in our show notes or in our next email to our email subscribers. If you're not receiving our emails yet, you can sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com. We have a little bit of time left, so how about we do a smart habit check-in? Let's see. I have gone back to one that I have tried many times, and that is just getting enough water throughout the day. I tend to get busy. I'll have a full bottle of water on my desk, and then by the end of like 2 hours, I realize I haven't drank any of it. Or a drop of it, you know? And so I'm really trying to make sure I improve my water intake throughout the day. I don't drink tons of coffee, but I do have probably 2 cups of coffee in a day, and that doesn't count as water. So I definitely need to pay more attention to that or set some reminders. So that's something I'm working on again. What about you?
I'm working on, you know, same old things I mentioned before too: sleep and meditation. I feel like, you know, it's been nice to relax and recharge this summer, but it also often means staying up late and still often with little kids and a pretty young dog waking up early. I've been feeling lately I'm having issues with sleep. I need to reset and, you know, put myself on the right track there. So I've been referring back to our episode on that topic. We'll link to that too. And really trying to meditate even for a couple of minutes in the morning. You know, I really, really like guided meditation. So I feel like that helps me set the right tone for the day.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And we haven't talked about our latest read. So let's share that real quick. Let's share our Book Nook segment before we wrap up.
Okay.
I read quite a few books this summer. And the one I really enjoyed, one of them is The Talented Miss Farwell by Emily Gray Tedrow. It's a really cool story of a small town girl who seems to be just like everyone else, but she in fact has a second identity. She came to love art and wants to, you know, explore the art scene and buy art and sell art. And she finds a way to do that in a not legal way, I should say. Mm-hmm. But it's a really cool story because you can, you know, it kind of goes between her normal life in that small town and the things she does and her interactions with other people and her secret identity, her other life, you know, people who know her under a slightly different name. It's a completely different person. So that's I'm not going to disclose any more details for people who want to read that.
I want to read that.
I'd really recommend that. So it's inspired by real events.
Cool, too,
which is really cool. What about you?
Cool. Yeah, I want to read your book now. Yes, I just finished The Good Sister by Sally Hepworth. And I think I may have mentioned another book by Sally Hepworth here before. She's got several good books. And this one is interesting. It's a story of two sisters, and there's like a codependency thing there because of the way that they grew up. They had a very different upbringing, and they had problems with their mother who raised them alone. And so they're adults now in the telling of the story, but, you know, you see some glimpses into their childhood. And they try to support one another, but they're very different personalities, and they both think differently about the way their mother treated them growing up. So it's just very interesting to see like what they do for each other. One of them finds out that she can't have a baby. So the other says, well, maybe I can have it for her, you know? And it's just like this intricate weaving of two sisters' lives together. One who is very socially awkward because she doesn't really understand social interactions very well. And the other one who sort of takes care of her and looks out for her. And it's just, it's a very, it's a beautiful story. It's got some humor in it. It's a little bit different from the other stuff I've read by Sally Hepworth. So it's a good read. I would recommend that.
Cool.
So that's it for today's episode. Thanks for a great chat, Veronica.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, we hope that you find these tips and ideas helpful too. We'd love to hear from you if you have any thoughts on this episode or suggestions for future episodes. We'll be doing another Ask Us Anything episode this fall to celebrate our second podcast anniversary. So if there's anything you're wondering about or would like to know, please send us a message and we'll try to answer your question in a future episode. You can leave a comment on our website, email us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com, send us a voice message, or contact us through social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
And if you like this episode, there are a couple of simple ways you can show your support. You can share it with colleagues and friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This only takes a minute, and we recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.